Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week the Policy Impact Coordinator at the American Friends Service Committee and a longtime ally in the struggle against U.S. militarism and global war-making, Ryed Jarar. Ryed, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Huge in the news these days, of course, is budgeting, including military budgeting. Is it getting worse, getting better? Where are things headed?
It's getting much worse. The president's budget released this week is asking for over $150 billion above the spending caps for military over the next 5 years. This is a huge number, and I always tell my friends that it's really hard to understand the difference between a million and a billion, but think about it this way. A million minutes ago was in March of 2013, but a billion minutes ago with a B was around the time of Jesus. So it's a huge difference. When we're talking about over $150 billion over the spending cap limits. These are huge numbers. We are already spending a lot of money on military. We spend almost 57 or 58% of the discretionary budget on military spending to start with. So it's just amazing that during a time of real cuts that are going to social programs and other non-military spending, that we are increasing our military spending in this fashion.
I'm often struck by the difference between war spending, which is sometimes hundreds of billions of dollars, and everyone gets upset about it, and they calculate it, and how many teachers could we have had, and they rage mm-hmm. about it, and ordinary base routine military spending, which across all the different departments is sometimes calculated at over $1 trillion.
Correct.
Which
Correct.
I don't know if you have it in your statistics, but I imagine a trillion minutes ago was a time of hunter-gatherers, if our species was even recognizable.
It's true, actually. That is one of the other numbers that I give, because a trillion, it's another level of zeros, you know. So like a million seconds ago was a couple of weeks ago, while a trillion seconds ago is 32,000 years ago. So you're right, that is, around the time of Neanderthals, definitely. So you're right with pointing out the ambiguity of the real numbers that we spend on military or national security, the so-called national security budget in our country. And that is a part of the problem. It's a part of the problem that we don't really have a solid figure that we can discuss when it comes to military spending. Because the official numbers of military spending are around $400 or $500 billion, which is a huge number. But actually, if you added all of the other expenses of the Pentagon, including nuclear weapon expenses that are usually classified under the Department of Energy, the number comes up to $665 billion this year. That is around 57% of the discretionary budget that the Pentagon decides. Now, $665 billion is huge because, that is almost half of what the entire world spends on military. But the budget becomes even more shocking when you add up other expenses, like, for example, if you add up the Veteran Affairs expenses these expenses are happening because of war, or other non-Department of Defense national security expenses, the actual budget that we're spending on national security in 2015 is $1 trillion and $9 billion. That is the number, $1.009 trillion. It's a huge, huge number. And when you think about it, that we're spending all of this money on military and militarization programs here at home and on waging wars abroad, and at the same time we're having budget cuts for very simple and important programs like Head Start programs or food stamps programs or nutrition programs for people who don't have enough food to eat. You can't believe it, that we're cutting a few million dollars here and there, and we're continuing to spend these unbelievable numbers on militarism and national security.
Sometimes we are in the peace movement depicted as somewhat selfish when we talk about how many teachers and parks and roads we could have instead, and the humanitarian warriors would like us to bomb more countries because we care about them. But it seems to me that tens of billions of dollars could address starvation around the world, could address clean drinking water around the world. I mean, have you tried to calculate what good could be done for the entire Earth with the amount of money we're talking about?
Correct. I mean, this is one of the issues that we deal with when it comes to messaging, because even my organization, the American Friends Service Committee, had a 4 or 5 year long campaign pointing out what you mentioned, comparing the military spending in Iraq or Afghanistan to human needs here at home. And we always compared, you know, like one day in Iraq can build this many thousand schools, one day in Iraq could feed this many hungry kids in the U.S., it could give this many scholarships here. And we get accused as well of being isolationists, or not willing to, you know, go help the needy abroad. And this is actually one of the problems that we deal with on a daily basis, that many of these wars and most of the military spending is justified as if it was for the good of other people. And this is a part of the messaging coming from the White House and mainstream politicians here in the U.S. that, you know, we're going to Iraq now to bomb them because we care about them. You know, we love them so much that we're bombing them to save them from the bad guys. You know, we're sending our troops to Syria, and we're sending weapons here and there because it's our duty, it's our burden to go there and protect people. And unfortunately, this messaging is very tricky. Many of our constituents, even those who are opposed to wars in general, would fall in the slippery slope of thinking, oh, you know, what should we do to save the kids in Iraq from ISIS? You know, what should we do to save women in Afghanistan from the Taliban? Maybe we should send some troops and missiles and F-16s there to bomb them. So it's a larger cultural problem, and I agree with you that, you know, we need to explain this a little bit in a better way. It's not either spending money on bombs that are falling on Iraq or spending it here at home. You know, we can engage with the world and be a responsible great power, very rich country, but without interfering in other countries' business and without invading them and bombing them. You know, there are other ways of engagement to support people who are needy, whether they are here at home or abroad. And these are the conversations that I think we need to have. But before we have these conversations to open up the space, I think we have to look at the numbers. The numbers are staggering. As I said, you know, like, just think about it. Out of the money that the Congress decides every year where to spend, and this is a good indicator for our priorities as a nation, we are deciding to spend 57% on it, on militarism. 57%. And 43% on everything else in life. I mean, I don't think that Americans would choose this if it came to their neighborhoods or their households. I don't think Americans would choose that if it came to their government, if they knew what's going on. But I don't think we are at a place where these numbers have made it to the public, where people are aware how much money we are spending on militarism.
No, they clearly, when informed, do not support it, but are not informed. This is the problem. We're speaking with Raed Jarar, who is the Policy Impact Coordinator at AFSC, the American Friends Service Committee. One thing, Raed, that I think some people have heard about in recent years, in the past 4 or 5 years, is the sequester and the caps put on spending and the grand bargain that was attempted and didn't make it through, and there was a great deal of debate around this need to cap spending, which was done, and now you're telling me that President Obama is proposing to simply blow through those caps. What's the story there, and what's the potential for using that fact to wake people up to the levels of spending?
It's actually worse than that. What the president is proposing is to bust the military spending caps without increasing any of the non-military spending caps. So in the beginning, there was the agreement to have a cut all through the programs, and 10% or 5% cut that will go through all military and non-military spending over the next few years. And there were negotiations, okay, this year we'll have it at 6%, this year we'll have it at 7%. Now, the concept of linking the military and non-military spending, was called parity, like how to pair both military and non-military spending caps to make sure that none of them is removed while the other suffers. This year, in FY16's budget that was just proposed by the president, this is the first official confirmation that we might end up lifting the caps on military spending while increasing or even continuing or increasing the military cuts on non-military spending. So the cuts on non-military spending were real. We're talking about over $85 billion in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's been a lot of, there were a lot of cuts. These seem to be going on either at the same levels or even worse in the upcoming years, while we will start spending more money on military. And this is the most concerning part, is that it seems that there is enough money that we have as a nation. It's not really an issue of money. It's an issue of priorities and how the Congress and the government is prioritizing now. They are giving the vast majority of our wealth to military spending, and they're increasing it more and more and more. We're spending more on military than we spent on our military during the Cold War, during any of the previous wars. We're spending more on our military than, the 8 or 9 or 10 countries that come after us, depending on how you count it. It's crazy when you think about it. When you think about it in reference to ourselves or to the world, there is so much military spending going on. And now we hear that we're heading towards an increase to military spending rather than rethinking our priorities.
I've actually, in recent days, seen messages from liberal think tanks praising the move to increase spending, because spending is good and not spending is bad. And you similarly see a debate coming from the other side of the spectrum in U.S. politics all the time, that any cuts to spending are good and increases to spending are bad. How in the world are we going to ever break out of this idea that all spending is equal until we get some segment of the politically active population to start distinguishing that human needs spending is good and military spending is a problem?
Correct. And look at it the other way around, too. Those voices who always tell us that spending is bad and they're against large government and, over-the-top spending, they're not talking about military spending. They will defend military spending to the last penny. They're talking about non-military spending. They want to cut non-military spending. and they want to make the non-military parts of our government smaller. But when it comes to the military, I haven't really heard that many voices coming from the right calling on cutting military spending or bringing it to more reasonable levels. So, you know, when you put the propaganda aside, we have two different world visions here. One of them is asking for more spending on human needs and on engagement and on issues that would help us build a better world without the use of military. And one vision that is, you know, calling for more spending on military here at home or abroad. You know, don't forget that these two things are linked.
Yeah.
And the events in Ferguson and elsewhere, the militarization of police, you know, these are evidence that our militarization of the world and our militarized foreign policy is reflected here at home as well. Tanks are being sent to police stations now, and these armored vehicles to police stations. It's unbelievable to see the type of weapons and mentality that is making it through to policing our communities here at home. So it's not only a problem that is happening out there. It is a problem of our world vision.
Absolutely. And it seems that of those two visions, one of them has two political parties and the other lacks that sort of elected support.
Very well put.
I also wonder about President Obama's justification. It seems he's named ISIS and Russia as threats to the United States to justify this kind of spending. You know, the wars are a small part of the military spending, but they're the justification. How in the world is he supposed to sell people on the idea that either ISIS or Russia is threatening the United States?
You know, when the propaganda machine starts selling some threat, they will find someone to buy it, because unfortunately, as humans, it is in our nature to feel to like this feeling of you know, security and, you know, fear of some enemy that we have to fight. Some people like to hear these things, and it's just about filling the blank of who the enemy is this week. So it's not very hard to sell it to the general public that we have some scary enemy out there. And we have to defend ourselves. It has been tried over and over and over, and the politics of fear, unfortunately, works better than the politics of sophisticated collaboration. You know, you can give a five-hour speech about how to engage the world and create shared security based on international law and mechanisms. Or you can tell people, you know, they hate us because of our freedom. They're coming to kill our children here, and we have to put our tanks, and we have to spend more money on militarism. And this alarmist speech usually, you know, gets more impact than trying to build a more collaborative framework for engaging with the world. So it's a problem with the messaging from the government, and it's a problem that I think we need to address with our grassroots, how to fight against this type of messaging that has been used for decades and decades and decades, how to fight against it, and how to, you know, have an alternative world vision that would deal with, even when there are real threats out there, deal with them in a more reasonable and more efficient way than the way that we're dealing with it now. Now, with the case of ISIS, I want to add that ISIS didn't really exist before the U.S. invaded Iraq, you know? And this is something that I think the U.S. government doesn't like to be reminded of, that ISIS and even Al-Qaeda in Iraq did not exist before the U.S. invasion of the country. So some of these, you know, problems that are happening around the world, including ISIS, you know, these are real problems. But let's take a step back and think why we have these problems. I think, in particular, ISIS and the situation in Iraq and now Syria, we can point out to the U.S. militarism and military intervention as one of the main root causes for why we have the problem to start with. So now the theme that the U.S. government is trying to convince us with is that we can bomb Iraq into moderation and we can bomb Iraq into stability. And this is ridiculous to think about it because we have bombed Iraq into extremism and this stability for the last 22 or 23 years. We started bombing Iraq in 1991. And never stopped until now. President Obama is the fourth consecutive U.S. president to declare, you know, a war on Iraq. So the notion that dropping more bombs would stabilize or make the country more moderate is laughable. And many of these things, I think, can be addressed by educating our grassroots, pointing out some of the historic facts of this engagement, and pointing out that the U.S. You know, method of dealing with crises has not changed in the last decade, and this method of relying on military tools is indeed a part of the problem.
It's interesting, Rayed, that you use the phrase fourth consecutive president to declare a war on Iraq, because in the U.S. Constitution, it was the Congress that was supposed to declare wars, and it hasn't done so since around 1941, and we've had war after war after war, and you've had these sort of semi-authorizations, half-hearted blank checks and so forth, but now the discussion has reached a sort of point of absurdity where Congress is debating whether or not to retroactively, quote-unquote, authorize a war that's already going and is going to keep going whether or not they authorize it. What do you make? Is this an attempt by Congress to sort of say, hey, we still matter, but even though everyone clearly understands they don't?
I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, at least other presidents had a fig leaf called AUMF, or Authorization to Use Military Force. Unfortunately, the Obama administration argued for months that they don't need an authorization to use the military force in Iraq because of some, you know, weird argument that they had. And now that they admitted that they need one, they're calling for a retroactive authorization, which is unheard of. I mean, even mainstream media like the New York Times can't but see, you know, the irony of what's going on. It's very concerning that the Congress is not being given a say in this military intervention in Iraq and in Syria and elsewhere. The 2001 AUMF, you know, it's 13 years old now. It has been used to justify U.S. Military intervention of some sort in 13 different countries. So AFSC did some research last year, and we found that in 13 years, we interfered in 13 countries based on that 2001 AUMF, because the language that was used is very generic. You can do whatever you want with it, and that's why the president is claiming that he can use it again now in Iraq and in Syria. So there is definitely a problem of oversight with Congress, and now there is talk about the White House or the Senate coming up with new language to authorize the ongoing war in Iraq and Syria. The drafts that I have seen are extremely concerning. They continue business as usual. They don't put much limitations on the administration intervention. And moreover, they don't put any limitations on the proxy wars that we have been waging in the Middle East. We are funding and training proxy groups in Iraq and Syria you know, armed militias who have been committing gross human rights violations. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and other organizations have documented unbelievable crimes committed by these militias and armed groups that we are funding. So while the administration is trying to convince us that ISIS is the bad guy and we're going there with our good allies to, you know, to save the day, you know, facts on the ground indicate that there are no good guys when it comes to armed groups in Iraq and Syria. What we're doing is we are funding and training some criminals to fight against other criminals. I mean, that is the problem. The groups that are funded and trained by our tax dollars are committing rape, beheadings, kidnappings, you name it, crimes against humanity, war crimes that are committed with these funds. And unfortunately, the EOMF doesn't have any vetting language, doesn't have any limitations for us to prevent the U.S. from continuing to give money to these out-of-control proxy groups.
We have about a minute left, Raed. We have proxy wars, we have drone wars, we have special forces, we have retroactively possibly authorized wars. It's almost too much to keep track of. At some point, do we need to sort of focus on the entire institution of war as what needs to be scaled back and eliminated?
I agree, and that's why I like talking about military spending. And this is what we started talking about today.
Yeah.
Because that gives us a larger picture. You know, when you think about it, you know, think about that we're spending over $1 trillion a year on militarism. Just think about it. Like, if we change that to a reasonable number, what we do with the rest of the money? And what would we do with the actual money needed for security, you know, of a sort that is actually effective in making the U.S. and the rest of the world more stable?
It's definitely where we need to be going, and I appreciate everything you and AFSC are doing to move us in that direction. Raed Jarar is the Policy Impact Coordinator at the American Friends Service Committee. Raed, thank you for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much, David.
And now an important announcement. We'll have more about this in an upcoming show, but you will want to go and check out this website, springrising.org. Spring Rising is a planned series of events in Washington, D.C. between March 18th and March 21st, around the 12-year mark since the shock and awe commencement of the current or perhaps previous war on Iraq. This will involve teach-ins and marches and rallies and protests and all variety of events. There will be an enormous rally and march from the White House on Saturday, March 21st. And this is an event that is bringing all kinds of peace organizations together, and environmental organizations and every other kind of organization imaginable. So check it out, sign your organization up, see about getting people to Washington, D.C., or doing an event where you are at the same time. SpringRising.org. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at RootsAction.org. Help end war at WorldBeyondWar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.